Mind and Body Reset, Modern Wellness Decoded. Science-backed wellness made simple.
You know, there's a question I find myself coming back to a lot lately. What if the most powerful tool we have for our own well-being isn't something we buy or a regimen we follow, but something we freely give away?
It's such a paradox, isn't it? I think about that all the time. For me, it really hit home a few years ago. I was feeling, well, a bit disconnected, just going through the motions. On a whim, I signed up to help tend a community garden in my neighborhood.
And what happened?
Honestly, I thought I was just going to be pulling weeds. But after a few weeks of getting my hands dirty, sharing stories with people I'd never have met otherwise, and seeing this little patch of land flourish, I realized I was the one being cultivated. It was a profound shift.
That's it, exactly. That's the heart of it. My own experience was with a youth mentorship program. I went in thinking I had all this wisdom to impart, but the energy, the resilience, the hope I got back from those kids, it recalibrated my whole perspective. It was humbling and incredibly energizing.
So, it really leads to the central question we want to explore today, doesn't it?
Could the simple, selfless act of volunteering be one of the most effective yet overlooked pathways to a healthier mind and body?
It feels almost too simple to be true. But today, we're going to get into it. We're going to look at the science, the real, measurable, physiological changes that happen in our brains and bodies when we help others.
We'll talk about that incredible phenomenon known as the helper's high. And we're not just talking about a fleeting good mood. We're talking about a potential pathway to a sustainable, transformative lifestyle.
And we'll hear some truly inspiring stories along the way. So stick with us as we delve into the profound and often surprising power of altruistic acts.
So that term you just used, the helper's high, it sounds a bit, well, a bit whimsical, doesn't it? But it's a real documented neurological event. When we engage in an act of giving, our brains release a cocktail of chemicals: oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, the same ones associated with love and pleasure.
So it's not just a metaphor. It's a literal chemical reward system built into our biology for being pro-social.
Precisely. It reduces stress hormones like cortisol. It's a genuine mood elevator. But what I find even more fascinating is how that individual internal experience scales up.
What do you mean, scales up?
Well, think about a large-scale event. There was a study after the 2011 Christchurch earthquake in New Zealand. The researchers found that the massive wave of volunteering didn't just help with the cleanup.
It rebuilt the social fabric.
Yes, it built social capital. All those individual helpers' highs created this incredible network of connection and community well-being. It was so effective that the researchers actually suggested that healthcare professionals could, in effect, prescribe volunteering.
Wow. Prescribe volunteering. That reframes it entirely, doesn't it? It moves it from a nice thing to do into the realm of legitimate public health strategy.
It does. But it also opens up a more complex side to this. If it's so beneficial, why don't more people do it? The barriers are significant.
Oh, for sure. Time is the big one. People are juggling work, family, just trying to keep their heads above water. The idea of adding an ongoing commitment, it can feel overwhelming.
And there's another, more cynical angle to consider. A criticism that's been around since the 60s. From thinkers like Ivan Illich.
You're talking about the to hell with good intentions idea?
Exactly. The concern that volunteering, especially international volunteering, can sometimes be less about helping and more about an extension of power. A kind of noblesse oblige where the volunteers need to feel good or responsible overshadows the actual needs of the community they're supposedly serving.
The rise of voluntourism. Yeah, I've seen that. where the experience is packaged more for the volunteer's resume or social media feed than for sustainable impact. It can do real harm.
It can. And it's not just abroad. Even locally, some unions have raised red flags that long-term unpaid volunteering can be used to replace low-paid entry-level jobs.
Creating a barrier to social mobility. You end up with a system where only those who can afford to work for free can get the experience they need to get paid. It's a deeply uncomfortable paradox at the heart of something so seemingly positive.
And that really is the central tension, isn't it? This beautiful, biologically rewarded impulse to help, running headfirst into these incredibly complex and sometimes harmful social and economic structures.
It makes you question the very nature of the impulse. Is the helper's high a reward for genuine altruism? Or is it just a reward for, well, for acting out a role that makes us feel good about ourselves?
That's a tough question. I think it comes down to a distinction that gets lost a lot of the time. The difference between intention and impact.
Oh, that's huge. Say more about that.
Well, the intention can be pure gold. You feel a pull to contribute. You want to make a difference. That's the helper's high kicking in. But if that intention isn't guided by humility, by a genuine curiosity about what is actually needed, the impact can be neutral at best and damaging at worst.
I saw a perfect example of this. I was talking to a manager at a local animal shelter. She said, after a big, heartwarming story runs on the news, they get flooded with well-meaning people who want to come in for one afternoon to, you know, play with the puppies.
Of course, that's the most appealing part.
Right. But what she actually needs are people who are willing to commit to coming in every Tuesday morning to scrub floors and clean kennels. The unglamorous, consistent work. The impact of one person playing with a puppy for an hour is minimal. The impact of someone reliably cleaning is what keeps the shelter running and the animals healthy.
That is such a brilliant, concrete illustration of the whole issue. It's about shifting the focus from what feels good for the giver to what is truly useful for the receiver. And that requires, well, it requires a certain quieting of the ego.
It really does. It's about asking, what do you need? Instead of announcing, here's what I have to give. And sometimes the answer to what do you need is something that doesn't give you that immediate, Instagrammable moment.
Yes. And sometimes the answer is just money, which feels impersonal to the donor, but might be the single most effective thing for the organization.
So, if we're looking at this as a path to our own well-being, this adds another layer. Maybe the real psychological benefit isn't just in the chemical rush of the helper's high. Maybe the deeper, more sustainable benefit comes from that very act of decentering yourself.
Of practicing humility. Of learning to be a supporting character in someone else's story instead of the hero of your own.
Wow. When you put it like that, that feels like a much more profound spiritual or psychological exercise than just, say, serving soup for an hour to get a jolt of dopamine.
It is, isn't it? And I think that's where the conversation has to go, because if we stop at the helper's high, we're missing the whole point. That's a transaction. I do this, I get a hit of dopamine, but what you're talking about, this practice of decentering, that's a transformation.
Right. It's the difference between a snack and a fundamental change in your diet. One gives you a quick boost. The other changes your entire physiology over time.
Exactly. And that change, I think, is about where you derive your sense of self-worth. So much of our modern identity is built on, well, on being the main character. Our achievements, our career, our personal brand. Volunteering, when it's done right, forces you to find value in being part of a collective, in being a small, vital part of a much larger machine.
But that can be incredibly difficult. And let's be honest, it can lead to some very real problems. I'm thinking about burnout.
Oh, absolutely. The risk is huge.
Yeah. Because if you're constantly in that supporting role, the one doing the unglamorous work, scrubbing the floors at the shelter, metaphorically speaking. It's easy to start feeling invisible, or just depleted. The well runs dry. It's called compassion fatigue, and it's a serious issue for people in caring professions and for committed volunteers.
It is, and this is where the nuance comes in. I think the antidote to that burnout isn't to stop giving, but to get smarter about how we give. It's about finding what some researchers call sustainable altruism.
Sustainable altruism. What does that look like in practice?
Well, it's about alignment. It's finding a role that doesn't just drain you, but also nourishes you in some way. Not in an ego-driven, look at me saving the puppies way, but in a way that feels authentic to you. Maybe you're an introvert who finds phone banking for a cause you love deeply energizing, but the thought of a crowded soup kitchen gives you anxiety.
So it's not just about decentering the ego. It's also about honoring your own nature in the process.
Precisely. Because if you force yourself into a role that's a complete mismatch for your personality or your skills, you're not going to last. You'll burn out and then you're no good to anyone. The animal shelter doesn't just need people to clean kennels. Maybe it needs someone who's a wizard with spreadsheets to organize their donor database. That's also unglamorous, but for the right person, it's a deeply satisfying way to contribute that uses their unique talents.
That makes so much sense. It reframes the question from a simple, am I doing good, to a more complex and ultimately more useful, am I in the right place to do good effectively and sustainably? It's about finding your specific role in that larger machine you mentioned.
And that, right there, is the key. It's not just about plugging a hole with your time. It's about finding the gear that only you can be, the one that makes the whole machine run a little bit smoother. When you find that, the burnout, it doesn't disappear, but it's held at bay because you're operating from a place of strength, not just obligation.
It's a shift from seeing volunteering as a duty to seeing it as a form of expression, a way of expressing your unique talents in service of something bigger.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from our whole conversation today. We started with the science, the helper's high, which is fascinating, but it's really just the appetizer.
Right. The dopamine hit is what gets you in the door.
Exactly. But the real, life-altering meal is the long, slow process of figuring out where you fit, of learning to ask, what is needed, and then honestly answering, here is what I can authentically offer.
For me, though, I keep coming back to the idea of humility, the decentering. I think in a world that pushes us to constantly build our personal brand, to be the hero of our own story, the most radical act of self-care might be to consciously choose to be a supporting character.
That's a powerful thought. It's countercultural, isn't it? To find fulfillment not in being seen, but in being useful.
And maybe it's not a one-time decision, you know? Maybe you try cleaning the kennels and realize after a month, this is depleting me. And that's okay. The goal isn't to martyr yourself. The goal is to then say, okay, that wasn't my gear. Let me try another part of the machine. It's a process of discovery.
So the ultimate act of giving isn't just your time or your skill. It's your willingness to be humble, to learn, and to adapt until you find where you can make the most sustainable impact.
And in that search, I think that's where you find that profound sense of connection and well-being we were looking for at the very beginning. It's not in the single act, but in the journey of finding your purpose within the collective.
What a place to land. From a simple question to, well, a whole new way of looking at what it means to live a good life.
It's been a lot to think about. Thank you, as always, for the conversation. And a huge thank you to everyone listening and sharing this space with us. We hope it sparked some new ideas for you, too.